back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Of course, you've heard of wine critics and cheese critics. What about a pot critic? Tomorrow on this program, I'll be talking with Jake Brown, who grew up in Iowa. He's now the pot critic for the Denver Post. Tomorrow on this program. Last Saturday, Obamacare enrollment began again. This is the second period of enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, a period lasting the next 3 months. President Obama aims to enroll about 9 million people into private health insurance plans for 2015 through the online exchanges. Joining me for the rest of the hour to help us navigate enrollment as it stands now and update us on the Affordable Care Act, Pete Damiano, director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center and professor in the Department of Preventive and Community Dentistry in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Pete, again.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon to you. We want to reach out to our listeners for the remainder of the hour. You can call us toll-free with your questions about enrolling in the Affordable Care Act, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Pete, we haven't talked to you for a while. Last year at this time, we were, counting down to the first enrollment period and then into it, and we had that disastrous rollout of healthcare.gov. I'm sure you've been to the website since. What's it like now?
Well, it's much different than it was when it first started on October 1st of last year. It's much easier to navigate. It's easier to understand what the costs and options might be without having to go through the entire process, which you had to do initially, because they didn't want to give people a false sense of what was there, but decided that people do want to sort of test the market. And so they wanted to get a sense of what plans might be available in the area and what the rough costs would be before they started putting in all of their personal information and going through that process. So that part is much better.
So I can go there without putting any personal information to healthcare.gov and sort of tinker around, put in some, get an idea of what might be tailored for me?
Right, correct. And so you can find out what plans are available in your county and what roughly what the cost might be. Mm-hmm. But to get the specifics, and it really is important to know what the specifics are, you do need to put your information in, and you want to do that because one of the issues that came up with enrollment last year, which both effectively helped hold down the costs of plans nationally, so now after the first year, the overall costs are lower than what people had estimated, which is a surprise for many large government programs. But part of that is because a lot of the plans are being offered are what are called narrow network plans, which means you have a smaller group of healthcare providers to choose from, which allow the insurance companies to negotiate better prices with those people and to be able to offer a lower cost plan. And we know many people that go into choosing plans, and this is one from one of our studies. We were looking at what, as we were going into the first year, what people were going to be looking for in choosing a plan. Cost was the number one thing, which makes a lot of sense. But when you choose only on cost, you have to be very careful about that narrow network issue and to make sure that the healthcare providers that you want to use, hospitals, physicians, et cetera, are in the network. And what is going to happen then in year two, both with the costs and the network issue, because you might want to look around at different levels of plans or types of plans.
The Affordable Care Act has been law since the spring of 2010. It's now fully implemented through a series of stages, yet it seems Americans remain poorly informed about the Affordable Care Act. Almost 9 in 10 uninsured individuals didn't even know that the enrollment was starting again this past Saturday. That's according to a poll from the Kaiser Family Foundation. Why are so many people not taking advantage of this when they could benefit and benefit tremendously?
Well, a lot of people, and this particularly the ones that are going to be most likely to benefit from it, are people from our studies that they're less knowledgeable about the ACA in general. They tend to be less technology or computer literate, and since the easiest way is to do this online, they're affected. These are people, many of them, that have either never had health insurance before or haven't had it for a long time. So not only sort of a health care literacy, but a health insurance literacy aspect. And there's obviously been so much negative coverage, press, news, et cetera, that it's turned a lot of people off and thinking that that's not necessarily something that they want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. If someone listening, undoubtedly people uninsured listening to your voice here, Pete, and up to this point have not felt the need to do it or felt simply because of all the political turmoil surrounding this issue or the botched rollout of the healthcare.gov or just the complexity of this issue, is that you can't blame people for feeling a bit overwhelmed. Is there help out there now so that people can find out what is due them?
There is help available. You can either do it through what are called healthcare navigators, and there's a group of those online, the state insurance commissioner's office. Sometimes local hospitals will have people that can help. And I do think it is important to feel comfortable trying to get that assistance. And it may or may not be as easily accessible as would make it comfortable for people to do that.
Mm-hmm. Is healthcare.gov always the starting point, though, to find even the local resources?
It's a good place for people in Iowa. Iowa has chosen a partnership model of the health insurance exchange or marketplace, which means that the state has decided to set the rules for the plans and eligibility, but are using the federal online exchange system. So that would be the best place to go and ask and to start, at least if you want to take an online approach.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned this partnership that Iowa has chosen this path, because now we know the U.S. Supreme Court will hear a case, King v. Burwell. This is where opponents of Obamacare are challenging the program's federal tax subsidies for low to moderate income consumers. They say the way that it's worded, the Affordable Care Act limits tax credit only to consumers who sign up on state-run health exchanges. Now, most states, including Iowa, don't run their own exchanges. We have this partnership exchange. So how could this decision potentially affect those Iowans who have signed up and gotten insurance through the exchange? Some 30,000, I believe.
And Ben, I can talk about this as a policy researcher, not a constitutional lawyer, but there are two aspects that sort of went on behind this. One is that there is inconsistent language in the law talking about who is eligible for subsidies, and there is a spot in there where it says only the state exchange issue and not the federal exchange. And part of that was also because there was a much greater expectation that many states, particularly those that were kind of more states' rights issues, would want to run this themselves and not defer it to the federal government. Well, it turned out many, many states, and particularly the ones that had some opposition to say, defer to the federal government. So what that meant is there were about 7.3 million people who gained private insurance through the federal marketplace. 5 million of the 7.3 gained it through the federal marketplace. So 7.3 million gained insurance, the private side of the exchange. So just as a reminder, you can gain private insurance by going to the health insurance marketplace and getting a subsidy up to 400% of poverty. Or if you're under 133% in Iowa, you can gain the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, which is our Medicaid expansion program. So then nationally, and it's not exactly clear the exact numbers in Iowa, we had about 30,000 people that picked up private insurance through the marketplace. But in terms of the proportions nationally, 5 million of the 7.3 million who gained coverage gained it through the federal, and about 4 million of the 5 million received a subsidy. So those are the people that would be potentially affected directly by this lawsuit if they're saying they're no longer eligible for that subsidy. So those are the people from – it could be 100 to 400%.
Would you expect, though? Yeah. Go ahead with your thought.
And then, in terms of Iowa, the 17 states that have state exchanges are not likely to be directly affected. It isn't clear. There's 14 states, Iowa, one of those, with that partnership model, whether they would be directly affected, or that there might be sort of an easy fix where you would go to a state website and be able to log in, and then you'd literally be diverted behind the scenes to the federal healthcare.gov site.
So you have at least a facade of a state exchange, and that may qualify you as running your own exchange.
Right. That's what some are suggesting might be a workaround. Mm-hmm. Again, until the ruling, it's really not going to be clear on what you know, if it's a narrow ruling, a broader ruling, and over what aspects?
Depending on the ruling, could it also provide impetus, a spur for government here in Iowa, legislature, to act?
It's possible. It's been discussed that Iowa might start its own state exchange in a year or so. It's not clear what the advantage is. And longer term, assuming this does move forward, what role the state should have versus the federal government? Do you need to have 50 different online systems, or is that part something that's more or less mechanical and having one that really works? Because we've, as even though you mentioned the healthcare.gov that didn't, over time it actually worked pretty well and ended up enrolling more people than was originally estimated, which at the beginning didn't look like that was ever going to be possible. And then it varied at the state level. You had some states that their exchanges worked, some didn't at all.
Mm-hmm. Pete Damiano is my guest for this half hour, director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, professor in the Department of Preventive and Community Dentistry. He's been our go-to guy for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act last year and this year again. And now that we're sort of in political territory, I know you're, of course, your area is public policy, but we've just had midterm elections, which saw big gains for Republicans nationwide, also here in Iowa. Given that the GOP is opposed to the Affordable Care Act, how might that affect its further implementation?
Well, as you say, our job as academic researchers is not to wade into the politics, but as it affects the policy, obviously have an interest. What's been talked about is obviously a number of oversight hearings and things to talk about, everything from the Gruber comments that have been played up recently a lot to actual technical aspects. There are some components of the Affordable Care Act where there are where there's bipartisan support for change, but there's been fear of opening up, changing the law, because no one was sure on either side what that might mean. One of those has to do with what's called a medical device tax, which is about a 2% tax on medical devices that funds roughly $30 billion of the Affordable Care Act's implementation. And if you were to take that funding out, because, again, there are people, both Republicans and Democrats, with medical device makers in their districts who have indicated some interest in trying to repeal that, where that remaining funding would come from and what that might do. So there's, you know, there's really some of the, just the criticism things. The interesting part, I think, is, and many of the opponents really never wanted to see this started for this reason, and that's how do you take something away from people from a policy perspective or a political perspective? So there's been roughly 8 to 12 million people is estimated have gained insurance coverage in this first year, and you would be taking, you know, that coverage away from those, let alone however many would be gaining it between now and February 15th, this open enrollment period that's going to be, you know, that we're currently starting.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying from a public policy perspective, it's hard to see how, from a public policy perspective, it's you're saying the Affordable Care Act is here to stay, even though it may be altered to some degree.
That's not my place
right
to say that. I would say there are things that are going to make it challenging to just stop it. But there are also things, you know, again, like the medical device tax. If you take that out, it's going to be challenging for it to continue. Depending on how the Supreme Court case rules, it's going to have some challenges, and then how that plays out. I mean, the president will obviously likely veto anything that would just be completely repealing the law. But where there might be some room in between, you know, ideally, I think we would love to see where there are things that could be fixed, you know, for both sides to work together. And then we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Let's talk about children and health care. And CHIP is an acronym that we know from years up until the present. I understand that unless Congress acts, federal funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, it matches state dollars to provide health coverage to children under 19 in low-income families, will end next year.
Right.
Do you see that being renewed? Is it needed now that the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented?
Well, that's the discussion that's going on out there, even among in policy circles as well as political circles. So one of the first things when the Obama administration came in 2008 was to renew the reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program. And that program is for children of the working poor whose parents work at a job at which they don't get dependent coverage. And one of the places that we know employer-based insurance has been moving is less dependent coverage to try to shift the cost, which has been substantial for many employers, but onto the families. And so the CHIP program, and in Iowa, that's called the Hawkeye program, from 133% of poverty to 300% of poverty has been very effective. And we did some of the early evaluations of that program. There are some would argue, well, with what's going on, we don't need that program anymore. What you would lose if it was not reauthorized is those people from 133 to 400% of poverty would then be purchasing private insurance at a subsidized rate rather than getting the Children's Health Insurance Program, which is, even though a lot of it is contracted out, is still more or less seen as a government program.
We have seen now many months of this new health care program actually delivering services to those who are enrolled in health insurance. What are you seeing there in terms of the delivery of health care services under the Affordable Care Act?
Huge changes going on. And a lot of it actually started with one small component of the Affordable Care Act that allowed for the development of accountable care organizations in Medicare specifically. And this was designed as a way of having healthcare systems and healthcare providers think about providing care to populations of people and coming up with ways that where you could both improve the quality of care and reduce cost with getting a reward back at the end if you held down your costs and met some quality metrics, and over time moving towards something where they would be actually at some financial risk. That's now spread over to the private insurance side. So like in Iowa, Wellmark has accountable care organizations on the private side, and what that has done is encouraged the system development where now in Iowa you have two large systems that really have formed. You have what used to be Iowa Health System is now Unity Point, and they're creating an alliance with physician practices and hospitals all around the state, as well as what's called the University Alliance, which is Mercy in Des Moines, Mercy in Mason City, Cedar Rapids, the University Hospitals, and Genesis in the Quad Cities. And so you're creating, to some extent, a hyper-competitive environment in some markets for people to be able to have what are called these attributed lives, the patients, in their networks with the hope of improving the quality and holding down those costs and getting some rewards back.
Mm-hmm. Now, are we, in fact, seeing that lower costs, higher quality of service?
Well, we have seen lower cost over the last 5 years. We've had actually less than 4% growth in healthcare costs, which historically is very, very low.
We've had healthcare. A deep recession, though, as well.
Correct. It's not all necessarily attributed to the Affordable Care Act. You're right. We had the recession, which decreased that. And then you have had this competition that's going on in other aspects. You know, it's hard to say. It's probably, you know, some can be attributed to each. The trend is expected to stay lower but still creep up from where it's at. Hard to know. In terms of the quality, it's just too early to really say. There's a couple of indications that hospital readmissions and emergency department use, which are two of the big markers that people are looking at, are changing. But there's other things going on. Medicare now is penalizing hospitals if they release somebody too soon and have a hospital readmission. They no longer get paid for that readmission. So that's also encouraging providers to be thinking more about that hospital readmission. But a lot of this gets at the quality and the care coordination and helping people get to the right level of care and change their behavior. This is particularly important for people with multiple chronic health conditions, a diabetic who needs to exercise, eat better, not end up in the hospital or an emergency department, and changing people's behavior, even though we all know we need to eat better and exercise, mm-hmm. you know, is really hard.
Mm-hmm. In the couple minutes we have remaining, I'd like you to share some of your thoughts about the questions you may have going forward as we proceed through this 3-month second enrollment period and as the fully implemented Affordable Care Act moves forward. What are the things you're going to be looking at that will, I guess, in the end, measure the success of the Affordable Care Act?
Right. And success, you know, it's obviously not a yes or no. It's going to be all these different components. And on the enrollment side, and I separate when I think about the ACA, the enrollment side from those delivery system pieces. On the enrollment side, are more people who have not been comfortable reaching out previously or might have early on and got discouraged when the site wasn't working, are they going to be comfortable reaching out gaining coverage at a price that's affordable. And affordable is defined by the law as less than 8% of a person's income. And then the people that are re-enrolling, what will the plans look like for them compared to what they had before? And are they comfortable, again, navigating that idea of the narrow networks, getting it with the right healthcare providers, being at a cost that they can afford? I think those are going to be the big ones.
Mm-hmm. If you're already enrolled, you need to pay attention now at the second enrollment period?
Right. You need to pay attention and
Go back to the site, log in again, and do what?
Right. Well, you've got two components of this. You've got, again, the private side. We've been focusing a lot of that on the healthcare.gov. But you've also got more people that gained insurance coverage through Iowa's Medicaid expansion, the health and wellness plan. And about half of those people had been in the IowaCare program before, which was an Iowa-specific program for people up to 200% of poverty. And they got automatic, about 50,000 of them got automatically enrolled into the health and wellness plan and now are having to re-enroll over a four-month period right now. And those people really need to pay attention, look for the paperwork, get those things back in so that they can stay enrolled in the Medicaid expansion part. Many of them and then you've got what's called the wellness plan, which is the lower income part of the Medicaid expansion, and the marketplace choice, which is the higher part, which are going picking plans from the exchange.
We have to go, Pete Damiano.
Right. Okay.
Thank you very much. It's incredibly complex terrain that you're helping navigate us through, but thank you very much. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure. Pete Damiano, Director of the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, Professor in the Department of Preventive and Community Dentistry at the University of Iowa. Pete, thanks again.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
Okay. Tune in again tomorrow. It's a News Buzz edition on our Friday. We'll talk with a pot critic for the Denver Post, happens to have grown up in Iowa, Jake Brown. That's tomorrow on this program. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.